Let me begin by saying tonight, it's very nice to be here today. Thanks for inviting me, and it's nice to be able to preach two sermons without being stopped by Glyn, so that's really nice. Makes a change. I think our last one was 1.5, Goes to Heaven. And so that's the theme of tonight's sermon, really, is a bad man who goes to heaven. And if I can spend some time putting it in context, and the first thing I want to say is that the Lord Jesus Christ is in bad company, and he stood before Pontius Pilate. He's been tried, and he's been sentenced to death. And as soon as he was sentenced, the sentence had passed. The soldiers would have took hold of the Lord Jesus Christ. They would have taken him away, and they would have flogged him severely. And then they would have began getting him ready to be crucified. And he would have been taken. There'd have been two criminals with him. There'd have been four soldiers assigned to each cross. And in charge of the whole thing would have been a centurion. And so Jesus Christ is with 12 rough Roman soldiers, two vile criminals, and is a great rabble all around him. This was really quite horrible group of people to be in the middle of. And this is significant, because Jesus Christ, even at this point, was identifying himself with sinners. In Isaiah it says, isn't it, he was numbered among the transgressors. I don't know if you watch Crime Watch. I genuinely find it the most scary program on TV, because even at the end they say don't have nightmares, but that dramatic music comes and you end up having nightmares. But it's quite a scary program, because it's real life and they're real criminals. And I don't know if they still do it, because I genuinely am a bit too, now I live in London, I'm genuinely too scared to watch it. But you've got like a rogues gallery with the most wanted people in Britain, and they look quite a bunch. Well, if you'd gone to first century Jerusalem and you'd seen this rogues gallery, Jesus Christ would have been numbered with them. He'd have been one of them, numbered with the transgressors. And so if you were walking through Jerusalem in that first century, you would have seen this on this earliest Friday morning, these vile criminals, and in the middle of them, Jesus of Nazareth. You see, I teach in Fulham. It's quite posh, but there are bits of Fulham which are not posh. And I walk past this place which is not quite so posh, and quite late at night, and it's surrounded by teenagers with hoodies up. They look quite hard. Now, I'm from the Welsh Valley, so I can look after myself, but maybe some of you would be scared. I don't know. But in first century Jerusalem, it was those type of people who Jesus Christ was in the middle of, numbered with the transgressors. And so here we see him in this company. And then after they got him ready, he'd have been put ready with these two criminals, and then they would have walked from the praetorium to the site of crucifixion. And they wouldn't have gone the quickest route. The Roman centurion would have taken them the longest way possible. He would have taken them, they would have come out past the temple through the first gate in the wall, and they would have gone through the busy business quarter of Acre. Now that was significant. Why? Well, because the Romans wanted to show everyone, if you break the law, this is what happens to you. And so they would have been taken, Jesus Christ, with this rabble, would have been taken the long way round, probably naked, carrying a cross, so the whole world could see, these are vile criminals. Break the law, this is what happens to you. You see, it wasn't just physical pain, it was psychological. Jesus Christ had to endure the shame of being viewed as the worst of the worst. Imagine, naked, carrying a cross. How embarrassing, how humiliating that must be. What was he doing even then? Well, he was enduring the shame of his people. Psychologists say that the biggest problem people face in America and Britain today is guilt. That horrible feeling of being found out. I don't know if this is true, but apparently Conan Doyle, who wrote Sherlock Holmes, he once sent a letter to famous people in Britain. And on this letter, all he said was, "You've been found out." And half of them left the country. No, he didn't know anything about them. But I wonder tonight, if I sent a letter, if you got home tonight and you opened the door and on the mat was a letter saying, "You've been found out," I wonder how you feel. If I said to you tonight, "I'm going to stop my sermon because I want to tell you a few secrets about people in this building," I wonder how many of you get the sweats and feel uncomfortable and loosen your collar. Guilt. I've got a mate. Let's imagine his name is Paul. And probably best not to tell him this story next week, all right? But just imagine we've got a mate called Paul. Imagine Paul used to live in Cardiff. Paul was once in his house, and two boys, let's imagine they were called Michael and Gary. They go to knock for Paul. He lives on a ground, a room on a ground floor flat. And they knock the door, and there's absolutely no answer. But they know Paul is in, because they can hear music from the back of the house. So the two boys, they go around to the back of the house, and they look through his window, and they can see Paul. He's stripped to the waist. He's got Tina Turner on in the background. He's got a hairbrush in his hand, and he's gone up to the mirror with his, well, gangly little body, and he's saying, "No, you're the best." And he's singing to himself, acting out, and being good friends, they stand and watch him for 20 minutes. And then they knock on the window. And Paul, let's imagine he's got a strong Swansea accent. He says, "Oh, no. He's been watched." Can I say to you tonight, you might be here. You might have guilty secrets. There are things that you've done which you are absolutely devastated about. But no one knows. But can I tell you, there's a day coming when a trumpet will sound and everything will be revealed. And you won't say, "Oh no." You'll say this: "I want the mountains to fall on me. I want the hills to cover me." Imagine tonight all your secrets, your thoughts, your words, your deeds come into light. Well, the shame and the guilt. But as Jesus Christ walked from the praetorium to the site of crucifixion, what was he doing? Well, all that guilt that you and I know was laid on him. Incredible. Now, I don't watch this program. Apparently, it's a program I think is finished now called Game of Thrones. I don't watch it. I don't recommend you watch it either. But in the Series 5 finale, apparently, there's a queen called Khaleesi. I might have said that wrong. And as part of her punishment, she had to walk, or was forced to walk naked through the streets of King's Landing. And the screaming, hostile crowd threw food and the contents of their chamber pots at her. But apparently, this is why we hit the headlines, that Lena Headey, who played the vengeful queen, had a body double for the scene called Rebecca Van Cleve. Well, can I say to you tonight, maybe you are here. You've got guilty secrets. You've got a past that haunts you. You are petrified of it being found out. Well, so have I. But in first century Jerusalem, I had a body double. And on himself he took all my filthy, guilty, rotten sins and walked those streets for me. But before he gets to the site, he collapses from exhaustion. We read earlier on to me that they call a man called Simon of Cyrene to help him. He's walking with his cross on his back. And he just collapses under the pressure. In the original, it tells us, the impression is from the other gospel writers, that these soldiers have to actually help Jesus Christ along. He couldn't put one foot in front of another. Don't you find that amazing? That the person who breathed a universe into being, the God who said, "Let there be light," and there was light, can't put one foot in front of another for what he was doing for me and you. But then he comes to Golgotha. That's the site of crucifixion. We don't really know what it is. We know it was outside a city gate. We know it was near gardens and it was close to a highway. We know it was called the place of the skull. No one really knows why. Maybe it was shaped like a skull. Maybe it was because skulls were found there. Someone, Origen and Athanasius, think that Adam's skull had been found there. We don't really know. But what we do know of Golgotha is this, or Calvary is this. It was a very unpleasant place. Maybe you've seen pictures, stained glass windows of a green hill far away. Well, that's rubbish. It was a rubbish tip. There was nothing pleasant or beautiful or refreshing to the senses. It was an ugly, atrocious, revolting place. Everything about that place had an odious look. There were skulls and bones and tufts of hair and putrid flesh scattered all about. We know that it was attracted people who loved these sort of spectacles, and there was a group maybe of women who cower away in the corner watching the scene unfold. But that's really the background to our story tonight. Jesus Christ, the eternal, spotless Son of God, in the company of vile criminals and rough Roman soldiers and a rabble. He has to walk through the streets naked, embarrassed, exhausted. And then he comes to a site called Golgotha, a rubbish tip outside the city gates of Jerusalem. Now, what's interesting about the account we're looking at tonight, Luke's account, all gospel writers mention it, but Luke gives us the most detail. And that's interesting because he's obviously talked to somebody who was there. And so tonight, this is history. And so maybe some people think that it was actually the centurion who gave Luke this information. But what we are reading about tonight, it actually happened. It actually took place. This is real life history. Close to the action. But let me focus in tonight on this really bad man who went to heaven. And the first thing to say about him is this. He's known as the dying thief, but he wasn't just a thief. This man hadn't stolen a pick and mix from Woolworths. He was a vile criminal. Can I say, before I go any further, that sometimes you can read the Bible, I think I mentioned this morning, and you can somehow think that this was a different world to us, and they were different people to us, and they are somehow covered in cotton wool or fuzzy, and they're just different. If this man turned up tonight, he would be horrible. You know that, don't you? This man was horrible. He was a terrorist. We watch the news, don't we? We see these girls who have been enticed to go to Syria to go after these men who are terrorists. Well, this man was one of those. He would have hated the slimy little taxman. He would have hated the Jewish authorities. He would have detested the Romans. And he would have felt that no one or anyone could sort these problems out. So he took it all in his own hands. And he wanted to get independence for Israel, and he would have done whatever it took. He would have felt that the system, the world, everything was against him. He'd have had a big grudge, bitter, angry, full of hate. Now, that was this man. He would have bombed anyone to get his way. If he was here today, he would have had bombs, and he'd have been making bombs, and he'd have been part of 9/11. Now, that was this man. A rotter. The likelihood was he was part of Barabbas' gang, and the middle cross originally was intended for Barabbas. That was this man tonight. Don't think romantically about this dying thief. He was the vilest of vile. And yet, by 6 o'clock that evening, He was in heaven. In heaven. In the morning, a terrorist raging against the system, killing anyone who got in his way. At 6 o'clock, he's in heaven. Well, how is that? Well, because he considered Christ. You see, even at the beginning of the day, the other gospel writers tell us that he joined in with the other thief, and they were both blaspheming Jesus Christ. They were both mocking him. They were both angry with him. But as the hours unfolded, and don't forget, he died after Jesus Christ. We would have watched everything. As he considered Jesus Christ, everything changed. Now, can I urge you tonight, maybe young people in particular, just to listen for the next quarter of an hour and consider Jesus Christ. Just consider him. You can do that, can't you? For a quarter of an hour, consider Jesus Christ. And what is it to consider? What did this man consider? Well, he would have seen how Jesus Christ conducted himself as they got him ready for crucifixion. You can imagine, can't you, that they would have stripped these men naked, and then they would have put them on the ground on wooden crosses. They would have taken proper big 6-inch nails. They would have taken a real hammer, and they would have driven those nails into real flesh, hands and feet. Now, I'm a terrible gardener. Terrible. And I'm actually a bit of a wimp. If I weed and I pick up a thorn, it is very difficult not to say extra words. Now imagine 6-inch nails driven into your hands and feet. Imagine the language. Imagine as the soldiers goaded them and made fun of them. You can imagine the hate and the bile that would have come out of their mouths. But not this man. This man was perfect. This man didn't react. This man was majestic, even in that situation. And then you can imagine as this thief hung next to him for all those hours, and how he spoke to his mother, how all the crowd who turned up to mock him, how he never reacted. You can imagine as the soldiers mocked him, made fun of him. They were the ones who'd driven the nails in his hands and feet. And yet, what does he say? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And he would have seen that if he prays that they would forgive, that God would forgive them, maybe this thief starts to think, if he can forgive those, perhaps he can forgive me. And then as the taunts of the crowd were, he saved others. Maybe this dying thief started to think, could he possibly save me? This thief was no doubt a Jew. You look back to his childhood, and maybe he would have been brought up and he would have known Psalm 22. And as he hangs on that cross, maybe back to his memory comes those words. They pierced his hands and his feet. All that see me, laugh me to scorn. And then the thief would have looked at the inscription, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, and his heart might have throbbed, saying, here I am in my dying moments, and could I actually be next to the long-promised Messiah? Can you imagine it? You see, this thief would not have been able to explain the atonement. He would not have been the best theologian in the world. But as he considered Jesus Christ, everything changed. Can I ask you tonight to do the same? Consider him. Consider him. You see, go home tonight, read the Gospels and read about him. And can I say this tonight, that if you come to him, not one sinner has ever come to Jesus Christ and ever been turned away. But Charles Haddon Spurgeon said, didn't he, not one person on Judgment Day will be able to say, I called out to him, but he didn't come to me. But what have you got to consider? What did this thief see? Well, he acknowledged that Jesus Christ was a king. He says in chapter 23, verse 42, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." He knew that even though he was hanging next to this man who was just a lump of flesh, he could see that this man was a king. And if you want to become a Christian tonight, that's exactly what you've got to do. But I would argue tonight that's the hardest thing for any of us to do. You see, unbelief isn't an intellectual problem, is it? It's a moral problem. I listened to Stephen Fry on YouTube saying some of the most blasphemous things I've ever seen about how he doesn't believe in God. He does believe in God. He just hates him. It's the same with Richard Dawkins. Why spend so much time writing a book about something that doesn't exist? He just hates him. And that's your problem tonight as well, isn't it? You hate him. Because if God is God, you can't be. And it's the hardest thing in the world to do. To admit you are wrong and to bow the knee to another. But if you want to become a Christian tonight, then you have to. You see, there's part of your life, isn't there, that you don't want to give up. There's sins you love, you don't want to give up. But to become a Christian tonight, you've got to accept that Jesus Christ is a king. And maybe like this thief, it would have been very hard for you to accept, to see that he's a king. Maybe you come in here tonight, and you come into church, and you think, is this real? Out there is real, isn't it? Barack Obama is real. Simon Cowell is real. The Premier League is real. Your job, your school, your mates, that's real. But this? And so you feel that this seems all a bit pathetic and a bit old-fashioned and a bit... And you think, I can't take this seriously. But like this thief, look long and look hard. Because the one tonight that I'm preaching about holds these people in his hands. Empires rise and fall at his command. This whole universe, he spoke and it came into being. Every mountain he built, every sea he rolled out, every star he named. He's the King of Kings. You see, he died upon a cross of wood, yet made the hill on which it stood. But the Bible says this, isn't it? He came to his own and they just didn't receive him. Maybe tonight you can't see it. Pray that you would be given the eyes to see. You see, in 2007, there was a famous violinist called Joshua Bell. And he was part of an experiment conducted by the Washington Post. And apparently Joshua Bell, he packs out concert halls and people pay $100 for a ticket. And apparently on this one day, I'm going to say it's wrong, and if you're a violin expert, I apologise, but on a Stradivarius violin made in 1713 and reportedly worth £3.5 million, Joshua Bell played in the metro station in Washington. But he played incognito. And this man who packs up halls, you can't get to see him for years in advance, he's played it all day and he made $32.17 because no one recognized him. Tonight, wouldn't it be catastrophic if you ended up in eternal hell? You ended up in eternal hell and you think back to this night and say, I heard about a saviour, but I just didn't recognize him. I was presented with the king. The king was calling me. But I didn't recognize him. You see, the good and the great of this world, they may well shake their fist at God. But they're just a drop in a bucket to him. And one day they will all stand before him. But not only did this man have to see that he was a king, this man had to see that he was a sinner. And that's what you have to see tonight. You see, that might really bug you. that some person you don't know is coming to this pulpit and telling you that you are a sinner. But it's not me telling you, it's God telling you. You're a sinner. But you know you are. If I was to put on the screen tonight, you are life, and say that there's been a camera following you all your life, it's seen into your mind, it's recorded all your words, and it's seen all your actions. Wherever you've gone, this camera's gone. It's got a record of your internet history. It's got a record of all the things you've bought. Everything has been recorded. Would you still sit there and say you're not a sinner? Or can I tell you tonight that God has seen everything? I taught once in Truckee Comprehensive School. It was the top of the Rhondda Valley. There was a boy called Kieran who was in year 7. He was 11 years of age. The cutest boy I've ever taught. He just looked angelic. But he wasn't. And in Treorchy Comprehensive School, we had 44 CCTV cameras. We had to have it. If you've been to Treorchy, you'll understand why. And one day, I was just in the big kind of, hub of where all these cameras were. And I saw Kieran standing behind the technology block with his back against the wall, just puffing away to his heart's content. And so I left this office, went to the technology block, and he was coming away from it, and I said, Kieran, come with me. Do you smoke? I can see him now. He said, Mr. Ebenezer, I am hurt. He said, Mr. Ebenezer, I can't believe you'd think that of me. Of course I don't smoke. So I grabbed him by the cute little scruff of his neck and took him to the camera and played the video back. And he looked and he said, sir, you're right, it does look a bit like me. Now, can I tell you, you can protest all you want, but one day God will take hold of you. And he will play back your life. And you'll say, that's me. You have to admit you're a sinner. You have to admit that Jesus Christ is the King. And you have to do then, you have to trust him. You see, imagine being this man. He was coming to the end of his life. He'd murdered. He'd stolen. He'd been angry. He was dangerous. He was vile. And there was nothing he could do about it. He couldn't go back and make things right. He couldn't apologize to people. He couldn't bring back the dead. This man never took communion. He was never baptized. He was stapled to a Roman cross. All he could do was look at that center cross and say, please, remember me. That's all he could say. And maybe tonight, you come into this church and you've messed up. You've got sins which haunt and plague you. You've got secrets which you live in fear of being found out. And you don't know where to begin to put things right. Can I urge you tonight to trust in a finished work? Just trust him. Say with a hymn writer, upon a life I did not live. Upon a death I did not die. Another's life, another's death, I stake my whole eternity. See, there's a story told, isn't it, about an Irish boy. He goes to you, an evangelist who's taking a series of meetings in Ireland. The man, the young boy goes, he hears him all week. He talks about judgment and the need to be saved and heaven and hell. And this boy is beginning to be troubled. And he listens, and on the Friday night, he listens to this man preach. And then he goes home and he can't sleep a wink all night. In his mind is this word, what must I do to be saved? What must I do? And so early the next morning, he runs back to the field and they're packing up. He finds the evangelist. He says, sir, what must I do to be saved? What must I do? And the evangelist says, boy, you're too late. You're too late. You're 2,000 years too late. It's all been done for you. Trust in a finished work. You see, I wonder tonight whether you've tried to save yourself. But this thief could do he couldn't even move. He just had to trust. See, John Bunyan said, didn't he? He used to pray, "Forgive me my sins, I'll try harder tomorrow." But ended up praying, "I can't be any better, just save me." Tonight, say that, "Just save me." And do you know you will? Because he's gracious and merciful. And his mercy is tender. His mercy is tender. And maybe you're sat there tonight and you think, but he must be sick of me. Do you ever think that about God? I can't pray again. He must be sick of me. I've committed the same sin again. I can't come back to him again. His mercy is tender. You see, we live in London. I cycle to work now, but I used to catch the tube. And where we live in Twickenham, there are two trains every half an hour, but they come within 2 minutes of each other. Ridiculous. When I'm coming home on a night that's quite late, if I've missed the train, I think I cannot wait another 28 minutes. So I phone my wife at 9 o'clock and say, "Please, darling, will you come and pick me up?" She always comes, but she always huffs. Always. God has never huffed at me. When I've come to him, having committed the same sin again, he's never huffed at me. Just forgives me. What a God. And you see, as I come to the end, this thief, that night was in paradise. This morning we talked about paradise, talked about the new heavens and the new earth. But can you imagine this thief's last few moments on earth? It had been about, I don't know, 5:45 on a Friday evening. It was the Jewish Sabbath about to begin, and they didn't want bodies hanging on the cross. And so the soldiers would have come to the crosses, and they would have seen that Jesus Christ had died, but they would have seen this thief was still alive. They would have taken a big club, and they would have smashed his legs. The pain would have been excruciating, and within minutes he would have died. And then they would have taken his worthless body off that cross, and they would have tossed it on the rubbish tip in Jerusalem and said, "Another terrorist sorted out." But at that very moment, God was welcoming him into paradise. What a gospel. What a gospel. And the thief would have got there, and he would have seen Moses and Abraham and David and all the good and the great, and he would have said, "I don't deserve this." But it's grace. It's grace. But there was another thief on that cross. That thief tonight is in hell. You'd have been as close to Jesus Christ as the other thief. But tonight they could not be further apart. Both these thieves still live tonight. Do you know that? The one is in paradise. The one in hell. Both as close to Jesus Christ. Do you know my worry tonight is there might be people here tonight just as close to Jesus Christ. But some of you might spend a lost eternity in hell. And every sermon you've ever heard will be playing through your mind. You see, on Judgment Day, there are people's shoes I would not want to be in. I wouldn't want to be in Jimmy Savile's shoes. I wouldn't want to be in Hitler's shoes. I wouldn't want to be in Saddam Hussein's shoes. But you know the people I feel the most sorry for on Judgment Day? Maybe people like you would say, "I almost believed. I was close, but I never trusted him." I urge you tonight to trust him. And the good news is this: whosoever will may come. You won't turn anyone away. Jesus Christ says, isn't he? I believe in election, I believe in predestination, but I also believe
that whoever comes to Jesus Christ will never be turned away. And that isn't the peg I'm hanging my hat on or my coat on. That is the peg I am hanging my eternal soul on. That whoever comes to him will never be turned away. The vilest offender who truly believes that moment from Jesus, a pardon receives. Maybe tonight you feel a vile sinner. I invite you to Jesus Christ. Humble yourself. Confess your sin. Admit he's a king. Admit you're a sinner. And then trust him. Let's sing a hymn. It's number 100. When all thy mercies, O my God, my rising soul surveys, transported with the view I'm lost in wonder, love, and praise. Number 100.